Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching from the book of Romans and will be continuing today with part one of Set Free. So let's turn in our Bibles to Romans chapter 6, verse 12, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
Here in the sixth chapter, Paul has been telling us that because of our union with Christ, sin's reign over us has ended. You remember as we read through, and then especially toward the end of the chapter, he is reminding us over and over again of the fact that we have been set free from bondage or slavery to sin. And this, as I said, this is just so vital, so vitally important now that we really get this. And, you know, it's not really that complicated. You know, God has made it relatively simple. You know, it's really just laying hold of what Jesus has done for us. And so it's laid out here for us, but we want to go back and we just need to examine, I think, a little bit further a few things. We want to look a little bit more closely at the nature of sin, the work of Christ, and then the power that we have received to be victorious over the reign of sin. And we're going to focus primarily on verse 12. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body, that you should obey it in its lust. So this is Paul's point here in this chapter. Remember, he began the chapter with, shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Certainly not. Perish the thought. God forbid. Absolutely, this is not why Jesus came, so we could continue in sin. So he wants us to understand through the teaching in this chapter how it is that we obtain the victory and walk in the victory. But we do need to know something about sin. We need to take a little closer look at it. Three things about sin that we need to understand. Number one, sin is deceitful. Sin is deceitful. It fools us. The Bible warns us about the deceitfulness of sin. And the Apostle Paul would oftentimes say to those that he was writing to, he would say, do not be deceived, knowing that that is the nature of sin, to deceive, and the fallen nature of man is to be vulnerable to deception. So we need to remember this right up front. Sin is deceptive. And in some strange way, Paul almost personifies sin in this chapter, almost makes it like a living entity of some sort that sort of has a mind of its own and is working against our sanctification. So we have to be conscious of what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a deceptive force. But secondly, sin is destructive. It's destructive. Now, that seems to be about as obvious as anything could possibly be, yet so many people don't believe it. But again, that's kind of part of the deceptive nature of it. People can't really see it, but yet sometimes it's even destroying their own life, but they still can't see it. They're still not making the connection. But sin is destructive. It's only always destructive. Now, we're told that sin does have a pleasurable element to it. So there's even the possibility that for a season, someone might enjoy sin. But it's only for a season. Because sooner or later, the destructive nature of sin will show itself. It's always destructive. It's always working for the destruction of the individual that it is operating on. It's always working toward that, but sometimes it's somewhat masked. But know this, it's always destructive. Sin is the opposite of all that is good, beautiful, wholesome, pure, innocent, beneficial, edifying, whatever other good words you can think of. Sin is the opposite of that. All of the ugliness and misery in the world and in the lives of individual people is the fruit of sin. And there's plenty of ugliness and misery in people's lives, isn't there? You don't have to go far to see it. In some cases, you just can look right in the mirror and there it is, staring back at you. This is what sin does. It brings about ugliness. It brings about misery. So sin is deceitful. Sin is destructive. Thirdly, and what I primarily want to emphasize, and this is what Paul is dealing with in the text here, sin is tyrannical. Sin enslaves its victims. Sin is like the worst imaginable dictator. If you could go back and just think through all of the despots that have ever lived in all of history, whether they ruled over large nations or small villages, or they ruled over their own household or whatever the case it was, cruelly. Well, all of those things are just a mere shadow of the tyranny of sin itself. Sin is tyrannical. Paul states it in the 7th chapter in the 15th verse. He says this, he says, "For what I will to do, that I do not do, but what I hate, that I do." This is the common experience of every one of us, isn't it? Every one of us, I'm sure, could say something similar to this. For what I will to do, that I do not do. I want to do the right thing. I want to do the good thing. I intend to do it. I vow that I'm going to do it. I make a commitment. I swear that I'm going to do it, and I don't do it. And then there are those things that I swear I will never do. I promise myself and maybe somebody else, no, I'll never do that. I'll never do that again. I hate that. I don't want to do that. I despise myself when I do that. And then what happens? I do it. This is the tyranny of sin over man. So many of the things that are passed off in society today as addictions are in actuality cases of intense bondage to sin. We're so far removed from this in our culture, the concept that there even is sin. We've got people today who are so bound up and enslaved in sin, but they're being improperly diagnosed. They're being misdiagnosed. No one's ever getting at what the real issue is, and so what they end up doing is they try treating symptoms. But because they never get to the root of the problem, the symptoms rarely ever really totally and completely clear up. But think of the things that people in our culture are addicted to. We use that term today, addiction, very commonly. And we find that people are addicted to all kinds of things. It used to be that addiction was somewhat limited to some sort of substance. You know, there was something that was happening in the body with the intake of a particular substance. There was something that was happening physiologically in the body that was causing an addiction. And so we understood, you know, people became drug addicts. Their system became dependent on this particular substance. But the interesting thing, though, is as time has gone on, what we find is there are people with identical kinds of addictions, habits, and behaviors, destructive forms of behavior, but there's no substance involved. They're not injecting something into their veins. They're not swallowing something. It's a different kind of a thing, but it's the same sort of bondage. That should tell you something. It should tell you that the issue is really sin. That's what's going on. So we commonly think of addiction in relation to drugs and alcohol. And it's certainly true that the body can become dependent on these things. But of course, somebody has to start, you know, engaging with them out of their own free choices initially. And then once they do that, then the habit begins to develop. But what's actually going on is sin is just tightening its grip over a person's life. But it doesn't stop with drugs. It doesn't stop with alcohol. We have people today who are known and even diagnosed in our society as sex addicts. They have all of the same characteristics, all of the same types of behavioral issues that a drug or an alcohol addict would have, but they're not addicted, like I said, to a substance. They're addicted to sex in various forms, perverted forms, generally speaking. People are addicted to gambling. I have known people over the years who have gambled their lives away. What is the explanation for this kind of thing? There are people that are addicted to stealing. There are people that are addicted to lying. There are people that are addicted to raging. And in our humanistic and psychologically conditioned culture, these things are all now sort of put under a category of some sort of illness or some sort of syndrome or some, you know, it's kind of gone into the category of being sort of like a medical problem. The fact of the matter is, this is a sin problem. Never, ever let anybody fool you to think that when a person is blatantly sinning, that they're somehow not responsible for it, or that it's somehow not sin. It's something else. I've heard people say this in Christian circles. Oh, well, you know, this person isn't really sinning. I know that what they're doing appears to be sin, but they're sick. They have a sickness, and that's why they're doing these kinds of things. No, the fact of the matter is, they are overtaken by sin. You see, it's possible that someone can become so severely bound by sin that their will has been taken over and they are incapable of freeing themselves from these kinds of behaviors. And this is what's happening in the culture today. And this is why those who reject the biblical picture of life and humanity and nature and all that, those who reject that, they will look at people with these behaviors and they will conclude, oh, well, they were born this way. They were born this way because this is their inclination. This just naturally comes. They can't stop doing this. And obviously, if that's the case, it must be because that's the way they were born. But it's not really the way they were born. It's what's happened over a long period of time of continually giving oneself over to sin. You can get to a point where you no longer have control over that. Now, not everybody goes to this extreme. There are many people who, to some degree, can still manage their sin, so to speak. Although they are the slaves of sin, yet that slavery is not as severe, at least externally, as it is for others. There are people who are engaged in what we sometimes refer to as life-dominating sins. Sins that just get their claws so deep into a person that they literally just completely take over their lives. And now the person becomes identified with their sin. They're a drug addict. They're an alcoholic. They're a sexual deviant. They're a child molester. They're, you know, a thief, or they're, you know, whatever label you put on them. But that's now their identity, because this is what they have become. Sin has so bound them up that they no longer have control. And truly, for a person like that, they're beyond the point of being able to exercise their will against that kind of activity. Their will is now overtaken by sin. The only way out of that situation is the blood of Jesus Christ. There is no human solution to that situation. Once a person's will is completely bound up by sin, there's no way that the person can get out of it, because sin is more powerful than the human will. This is why it's so important to be on our guard against dabbling even with sin, because it, generally speaking, never starts with a headlong leap into sin. Bondage always begins with a little dabbling here and a little dabbling there. And then as time passes, there's a little more engagement. And then before you know it, you're doing this thing over and over and over again. And then eventually you come to a place where you no longer cannot do it. Now, this should never be the case with a Christian. But unfortunately, sadly, there are times when Christians will drift back into sin, give themselves over to sin, and end up, having once been liberated, brought back into captivity once again. But that doesn't have to be the case. And there is a way out. But the only way out is through Christ. So as we look at the society that we live in, and as we see, I think, in an increasing manner, more and more people's lives being truly bound up in sin, we need to realize that we, meaning the church, believers, we've got the solution. And where the world might even at some point write these people off and just simply say, you know, there's nothing we can do about this, we are still able to provide a satisfactory solution. But of course, the person has to be willing to take the medicine. And the medicine is receiving Christ. And the most pathetic thing of all is to see people who are so bound up in sin and then being offered the remedy of Christ, but yet refusing it, thinking that somehow by holding on to what they're holding on to, that they're going to be okay. But of course, the fact is, they're not. So, sin enslaves. But this is what Jesus came to deal with. Jesus came to deal with the most severe cases of slavery to sin. Remember the story in the Gospels of the demonized man. There were two of them, Matthew tells us, but all of the Gospel writers focus on the one particular individual who was bound in chains, crying out, living in the tombs, naked, destitute, and frightening, to say the least, because having this superhuman strength and all of this kind of thing. And nobody could handle this person. Nobody could deal with him. There was nothing that anybody could now do for him. He was unable to liberate himself, and nobody else could do anything for him. So he was then consigned to the cemetery. But Jesus comes, and what does he do? He sets the man free. You remember the story there of how the man comes, and Jesus, Son of the Most High God, what do we have to do with you? Jesus says, what is your name? Our name is Legion, for we are many. The man was thoroughly demonized. But then Jesus cast the demons out of him, and then we find him, we read there, seated, clothed, and in his right mind, and saying, Lord, I want to go with you. I want to follow you. And Jesus says, no, go back to your family and show them the great things that God has done for you and how he's had mercy on you. That's the kind of thing we're talking about, though. And we see in that particular story the power of Christ to deliver from that kind of bondage to sin. So there's no one that is too bound up that Jesus can't set them free, even though they could not liberate themselves, even though somebody else would not be able to free them, Christ can and will and still does free people today. I was with a friend last week, and I've shared some stories about his life, a former criminal gang member, spent several years in prison and so forth. And I love being with him because he's such a testimony to what we're talking about here, the power of the gospel to set somebody free. But he's always got a bunch of stories about other, you know, hardened criminals and, you know, people that were just seemingly incurably wicked who have come to the Lord. So he was telling me this story last week when I was with him about this particular person who was the head and kind of the founder of a notorious gang. And because of his criminal activity, he spent decades in prison. And he was finally released from prison after several decades in prison. He was still as wicked as he had ever been. And his wife, in the course of events, had become a Christian. And she had actually been influenced by a particular woman, an older woman. And so there came a point where this individual had an encounter with this woman that had led his wife to the Lord. And he was very angry at this woman for doing this. It kind of ruined his life to have a Christian wife. And so she comes to him, and she says, do you know who I am? And he says, oh, yes, I know who you are. You're that woman who ruined my life, sort of a thing. And she looked at him, and she said, I know who you are too, and I'm not afraid of you. And Jesus loves you. And so, you know, her boldness really kind of took him back a little bit. You know, this is the kind of guy that you'd be afraid of. She wasn't afraid of him. She had no fear. So she began to share the gospel with him. And after about 30 minutes, she finally asked him, would you like to receive Christ? And he said, I would. I'd like to receive Christ. He became a Christian. And my friend was, you know, just went on to tell me how this guy's been walking with the Lord now for about 15 years and just what God has done in his life and all the amazing ways that the Lord has used his testimony because of, you know, where he came from and so forth. But the whole point is this. Here was a man who was completely bound up in sin, no way out, decades in prison, did nothing to reform him. The moment he was on the streets, he was right back to the same activity that got him put in prison in the first place. But an encounter with an elderly woman with the gospel changed his life and gave him a new destination for eternity. That's what Christ does. That's what the gospel does. That's the power that the gospel has in it.
We'll return with more insightful lessons from the book of Romans in our next study as Pastor Brian continues with part two of Set Free. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled Set Free. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number B0131. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. Pastor Brian would also love to connect with you online, and he can be found at facebook.com/Pastor Brian Broderson, also on Twitter at twitter.com/Brian Broderson. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.